HB. Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Jada Lucas.
And I'm Leanne Moreau. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, March 19th, 2018.
We are studying many of the different compounds in the cannabis plant and seeing how are they working in the brain.
Indiana voted to legalize cannabidiol oil this legislative session. On today's edition of Big Talk Extra, WFHB correspondent Michael Glab speaks with IU research scientist Heather Bradshaw about the uses of CBD oil. That's coming up on today's edition of Big Talk Extra with Michael Glab.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Shay Upadhyay has been volunteering at Wonder Lab Museum since she was in the seventh grade and has been a dedicated volunteer ever since. Upadhyay expanded her volunteerism to include service on the Monroe County Youth Council and the Indiana Coalition Against Domestic Violence Youth Council. On this week's Activate, listen as she describes the impact that being a volunteer has had on her life and her community. But first, your daily headlines.
Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb is calling for a special session of the state's legislature to convene in May. The appeal comes after the state's short legislative session ended in arguments and bickering between Republicans in the State House last week. Governor Holcomb's office is calling for the special legislative session after several Republican priority bills failed to come to a vote before the session ended on Wednesday at midnight. Among the bills left unfinished were bills that would have eliminated handgun licensing fees and allowed churchgoers to carry guns on school grounds. This special session is estimated to cost approximately $30,000 a day, according to Indiana Senate Democratic Leader Tim Lannan's office. At the top of Holcomb's agenda is the passage of a tax reform bill and a school safety bill. Republicans control a supermajority in the state's legislature, holding 70 out of 100 House seats and 41 out of 50 Senate seats. The Associated Press reports both Republican House Speaker Brian Bosma and Republican Senate Leader David Long came out in support of Holcomb's decision to call the special session after blaming each other for failing to get bills passed last week. Not listed among the bills to be considered in May were any measures attempting to address reported problems at the Department of Child Services. Democrats have been calling for an inquiry into DCS after the department head, Mary Beth Bonaventura, wrote a scathing resignation letter to Governor Holcomb late last year.
The number of Indiana counties under an emergency declaration continues to grow. Governor Eric Holcomb expanded the list to an additional 4 counties on Friday, bringing the total number of counties experiencing flooding to 35. A near-record amount of rain fell on the northernmost and southernmost parts of the state last month. The torrential downpours saturated northern counties and caused the Ohio River to overflow its banks in the southern portion of the state. Friday's declaration of an emergency in Gibson, LaGrange, Vandenberg, and Vermilion counties mean over one-third of the state is in a state of emergency due to flooding. State officials are cautioning residents in the affected counties to beware of predatory contractors. The emergency declaration lasts for 30 days and extends state resources to local governments.
Indiana University Health for Southern Indiana is reinstating visiting hours at its hospitals. Officials say the restrictions on hospital visitors were introduced due to this year's exceptionally harsh flu season. Jean Young is the infection program manager for IU Health Bloomington. Young says this year's flu season was the worst she's ever seen.
Normally we'd have maybe one or two flu patients hospitalized at a time. And this year we had like 24 hospitalized at a time. And that's why we had to put visitor restrictions, is because the high number of admissions that we were getting for the flu, it was the highest that I've personally seen here.
The Indiana State Department of Health says, according to its latest estimates, 278 people have died so far during this year's flu season. Over 200 of those deaths are from victims over 65 years old. Young says, while IU Health's lifting their visitor restrictions because they're seeing a more modest number of flu cases, flu season isn't over yet.
We want to always remember to cover our coughs and to wash our hands. The flu is still out there. It's just not, it's back to baseline. So we want to make sure that people understand the flu is still circulating. And the visitor restrictions are for our whole southern region, for IU Health, So that would be Bloomington, Bedford, Paoli, and Morgan.
This year's particularly harsh flu season was attributed by ISDH to a more resistant strain of the flu virus. Flu season usually lasts from late September to early May.
The Indiana Department of Natural Resources is accepting public comment over proposed rule changes until this Friday. As WFHB's Jonah Chester reports, the new rules vary, from allowing for a bobcat hunting season to adding bat populations to the endangered species list.
The Indiana Department of Natural Resources will hear public comment over proposed wildlife rule changes this Thursday. Among the 22 rule changes the DNR is considering is a measure that would force animal control to euthanize captured raccoons, possums, and coyotes. Previously, the DNR allowed pest control workers to release captured wildlife in a remote location. The new rules also would permit residents to shoot squirrels from a stationary boat and would allow for the creation of a bobcat hunting season. The state would also move 3 native Indiana bats to the endangered species list. Little brown bats, tricolored bats, and northern long-eared bats have all seen severe population decline in the state over the past decade. A measure also removes 7 invertebrate species from the endangered species list. All 7 species are types of mussels and are now considered extinct in the state of Indiana. Residents have until Friday to make comments on the proposed changes. From there, the amended rules move on to the Attorney General and the Governor for approval. The full text of the rule changes can be found online at the Indiana DNR website at in.gov/DNR. For WFHB, I'm Jonah Chester.
The City of Bloomington is accepting public comment on the potential purchase of an armored truck through Friday of this week. The city announced earlier this year that it plans to spend $225,000 on the purchase of the truck for the police department. Public backlash by activists and Black Lives Matter advocates had led the city to hold a series of public meetings on the purchase. Mayor John Hamilton is expected to make an announcement on the purchase at the end of the month.
Monroe County will be conducting a tornado drill tomorrow. Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb has designated this week as Severe Weather Preparedness Week. The test will occur between 10 to 10:30 tomorrow morning. Monroe County Emergency Management stated in a press release that the test will be a full drill, meaning, quote, the sirens will activate for the full 5 minutes, as is the standard operating procedure, whenever an actual tornado warning is issued, unquote. The test will be postponed till Wednesday in event of actual severe weather. According to the National Weather Service, a mix of snow and rain is expected to begin tonight and end tomorrow night. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Jada Lucas.
And I'm Leanne Moroz. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Heather Bradshaw is a research scientist at Indiana University's Department of Psychological and Brain Sciences. She specializes in lipids, what laboratory detectives like her call fats. Lipids, or fats, are indispensable substances that allow our brain cells to communicate with each other, as well as other organs and systems of our body. One such lipid class are the cannabinoids, the fats found in marijuana plants. Identifying and isolating these lipids may result in pharmaceutical drugs that can relieve symptoms of diseases and perhaps even cure certain cancers. Bradshaw joined Michael Glab on last week's Big Talk. Today, she talks about the possibilities of medications arising from research into the marijuana plant.
Specialized lipids are ways that our cells talk to each other.
Neurosignaling.
Yes. Yeah. How neurons talk to neurons, neurons talk to glial cells, support cells, how the immune system of the brain, which are called microglia, they seem to have big messages between each other that are lipids as well.
One of the lipids is the cannabinoid.
Well, cannabinoid is a class of lipids. There are quite a few cannabinoids. There's, of course, the most famous, which is delta-9 THC, which is what people think of with cannabis, which is why it's called cannabinoids. They're molecules that are made in the cannabis plant.
So what we're talking about in civilian terms is pot.
Yes.
Marijuana.
Yes.
Okay.
So, and the reason that marijuana has any effect on anyone is that there are molecules in that plant that activate a system in the brain. And that system didn't evolve so that maybe one day you would interact with that plant.
Mm-hmm.
We have what's called an endogenous or in our own bodies system that we have called now the cannabinoid system, because we as a scientific community figured out first that there are these compounds in cannabis that activate certain receptors and they're in the brain. And then by doing that, we realized, oh, there must be this endogenous system. And what is that? What are those systems? And interestingly, probably not too much of a stretch, but the compounds in the cannabinoids in cannabis are lipids.
Yeah.
And the compounds in the brain that activate the same receptors are lipids as well. And so that's the connection there.
So is there a possibility then that if we partake of these particular lipids,
mm-hmm.
smoke pot,
mm-hmm.
we are somehow changing that messaging system in any way?
Absolutely.
And how?
Well, I think that's a big question right now. And the part of the issue is that if people take medicinal or recreational cannabis, they are not just taking one molecule.
Mm-hmm.
And because we've actually, as a scientific community, had synthetic or isolated THC that has been in a pill form for many years, it doesn't have nearly the same effect as people who take cannabis.
Even though it's chemically...
Well, it has one chemical. And the point is that cannabis has lots of chemicals, right?
Which somehow alter the effects.
That they certainly appear to different... molecules in the cannabis plant have different effects.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not all THC that's having an effect. And it's very likely that medicinally it's probably many of the other compounds that are having effects in for different diseases. And that's one of the things that the group of scientists that I work with across the world, we are studying many of the different compounds in the cannabis plant and seeing what systems are they working on endogenously? How are they working in the brain? And also, what are those endogenous ligands? What are those endogenous systems so that we can understand them better? Because there are lots of effects of cannabis, negative and positive.
Mm-hmm.
And so, because that's the thing too, is that it's not all, oh, you know, it's medicinal cannabis, that's great and it's going to cure everybody. Well, no. If, like with any drug, if it has an effect in a for a disease, then it has an effect. And if somebody doesn't have a disease and they're taking that drug over and over again, then it could actually cause a problem. And so this is, you know, so many of us are just trying to figure out, what are all the different molecules in the cannabis plant? How do they work in the brain and in the body? And, you know, how do we go from there?
Before we started recording, you and I were talking about how people do their own independent research, as it were. And I put the word research in quotation marks because they go to the University of Google. I've seen this before. Marijuana basically cures cancer.
Well, I don't want to be, I don't know the word, glib or whatever, but if it were that simple, we would be done. Okay.
But the pharmaceutical corporations are putting the kibosh on all of this. That is the part of the narrative.
Well, that's part of the narrative. But again, if it were that simple, mm-hmm. you know, we there's no way I think our human community would say, no way, you know, we're going to let these people suffer and all these groups make money, mm-hmm. even though we know the answer, because right. we really don't know the answer.
Right.
A big part of the issue with this concept of medical cannabis is mm-hmm. that there are so many different forms of the plant, and that a sort of interesting and many of us would say unfortunate side effect of the nature of how it's been grown for decades, which is illegally in mm-hmm. most parts of the world, is that those strains that had more THC and gave people a quicker high mm-hmm. were selected for.
Yes.
Over those other strains that were how the plant evolved, which might actually have more of these compounds that might help people.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's still something that as a world community of researchers, we have to grapple with in terms of looking at the epidemiological data of saying this group of individuals say that they get a symptom relief in this pathophysiology, this disease, with cannabis. And we have to say, well, which one?
Yeah.
How much did they take? What is it that they're, you know, what strains are there that they are using for their therapy, so that we can look at that and try to back out of it and say, well, what are those molecules? And of course, some of the people that protest almost against this concept, again, this whole bringing it back to the pharmaceuticals, is mm-hmm. that it's really difficult. As basic scientists, we want to understand how things work.
Yeah.
And so we want to be able to isolate the different molecules in the plant and test them at different receptors and different pathways and with different disease models and say, well, is this the one that's working? So that then we can isolate that and just give that to people. And they're mm-hmm. like, well, that's a drug. We don't need a drug. We have this plant already. And
yeah.
so, but as a scientist and a neuropharmacologist, I just think, well, but you don't, maybe you don't need all the rest of the stuff. You just need those few compounds in the right amount that you know every time that
targeted.
You take it, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That it's going to, that's what's going to be there to help you.
That was IU research scientist Heather Bradshaw speaking with Big Talk's Michael Glab about the possible medications arising from marijuana. You can listen to Big Talk every Thursday at 5:30 in the afternoon on WFHB.
Support for WFHB comes from Lorne Wood Builders. Lorne Wood Builders is a family-owned company that sources local materials and local craftsmen to minimize environmental impact and sustain community. More information is available online at lornwoodbuilders.com.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring tales of inspiration from local citizens who stand up for what they believe in. and encouraging you to find your cause. Live your passion. Make a difference. Volunteer.
Hi, my name is Shea Upadhyay, and I volunteer with the Wonder Lab Museum, the Mentor County Youth Council, and the Indiana Coalition Against Domestic Violence Youth Council. I definitely have appreciated making connections around the community within the different organizations that I'm affiliated with. It's really neat to see how the different organizations connect together, especially through the Mentor County Youth Council, because we all come together on Global Youth Service Day, and we have a lot of high school peers who volunteer at different sites, and we'll all meet back up in one location, normally the warehouse, and talk about the impact we've made. I have definitely been able to take on a lot of responsibility as a young adult, and balancing that with schoolwork and also improving like email skills and stuff has been a really great experience that I don't really think I would have gotten just by like advancing my high school career. I definitely think that being involved in extracurricular activities opens you up to a different part of Bloomington's community. So I think being a volunteer in high school has definitely opened me up to inviting my peers to attend different service events and get involved in different responsibilities and roles too, so not just the same thing. Over the summer, I was an intern for Wonder Camp, a summer camp through Wonder Lab. I was the assistant to the high school intern coordinator. I was an asset to her because I knew a lot of high schoolers who wanted to come and volunteer just for a few hours every morning for a week. And it was really awesome to see all of my friends making an impact in an organization that I really am passionate about. And I just enjoy connecting people together and seeing the big impact. I think in service, seeing your work achieved or seeing the end goal can happen in lots of different ways. For example, if I'm volunteering with Parks and Rec, the impact is almost immediate because you can see how many trees you've cut down. With my work at Wonder Lab, it's been a lot of long-term projects. Same with the Mentor County Youth Council. Our end goal is Global Youth Service Day, but I think that we achieve a lot every day in between that because we're always making connections and we're always making small impacts leading up to the big impact with so many of our peers. I think Mentor County Youth Council is a really good example because we volunteer monthly, and so that in itself is making an impact, but our giant impact on Global Youth Service Day is a really awesome event where we can not only show other people the impact that we're making, but also include them and allow them to be a part of it. Thanks for listening. My name is Shea Upadhyay, and I'm a volunteer with the Wonder Lab Museum, the Indiana Coalition Against Domestic Violence Youth Council, and the Mentor County Youth Council.
You may visit the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network website to see a full organization profile at bloomington.in.gov/volunteer. Now here's a rundown of current volunteer opportunities in Bloomington and Monroe County.
For the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake, with three ways that teens can get involved in their community. Bloomington Parks and Recreation has many opportunities open to teens and groups. And who doesn't like volunteering with friends? Trail maintenance, creek cleanups, and park work days are just some of the ways you can help, together. Or meet your friends at the pantry. Mother Hubbard's Cupboard has regular shifts for volunteers in the pantry, in the kitchen, and in the gardens. Teen volunteers are invited to be part of this dynamic food justice organization. Or become an asset builder for young kids as a member of the Page by Page Project. Page by Page team volunteers receive training on the 40 developmental assets and how to build those assets in others. Team members then use their training to engage children in after-school programs in reading and asset building activities. It's a fun and positive way to influence a child to be their best self. And that's a look at just some of the ways you can connect to your community through volunteering. For WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build an empowered, vibrant, and engaged community. You may visit bloomington.in.gov/volunteer to find and sign up for local volunteer opportunities. All episodes of Activate are available online at wfhb.org/news/activate. For Bloomington Community Radio, I'm Jennifer Brooks.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin and Jonah Chester in partnership with CATS, Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glad.
Activate is produced by Lucy Shake from the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Wes Martin. Our theme music is provided by Ben Lumsdane, Scott Schmadke, and Danny Graff. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Leanne Morose.
And I'm Jada Lucas. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming online at WFHB.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@WFHB.org.
Stay tuned for KiteLine, a program amplifying the voices of those within Indiana's prison system. Coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@WFHB.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at WFHB.org and catch live broadcast of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.